Hey, folks, welcome to the show. And today we have with us Mr. Kinnar Sachdev. But before we go into him, hey, Sharad, how's it going, man? And let me guess what your answer is going to be.
You won't get it right today.
Yeah, really? you have planned something new?
I'm very excited today, as always.
You're very excited today.
We've got someone who's already been on the show before, so lots have changed, obviously, in terms of the environment, but also from a business traction. So should be an interesting catch-up conversation today.
Absolutely. Welcome, Kinnar. How are you?
I am great, guys. So nice to see you guys again.
So because you are in the second edition with us on Long Shots, we are not going to give you a long and extended intro this time.
yeah. That works, man. I'm I haven't done anything worth a long intro yet.
Oh, no. So come on. Now you're self-deprecating humor doesn't fly very well.
I love it. let's bring the questions on.
Oh, bring the questions on. So Kinnar is always in the mode, in terms of the Q&A. But no, before that, obviously, Kinnar, you run Nourish. And in your own words, it's a platform to create online stores for selling courses and content. And I imagine in the last 6 months, a lot more people have been tapping in the Nourish platform, right? I mean, the business model of monetization of content itself has changed. Plus, I'm sure a lot of people have moved from the offline world to the online world, with the sectors, be it F&B, be it aviation, hospitality, getting hit in a major way because of the pandemic, and people trying to explore new avenues to make money, to spread the word about their work. And I guess Nourish fits pretty well in that mix, doesn't it?
Well, we've had a very interesting lockdown period from a standpoint of being able to help a lot many people. Mm-hmm. Look at the numbers. I mean, it's been interesting. I think numbers speak for themselves. So we were on 500 content creators in the end of March, roughly. And now we are looking at about 6,500 content creators.
Wow.
So we've acquired almost 6,000 more in the last 4 months. Not actually even six. So, April, May, June, July. In fact, even April was quite slow because we were just ramping up our team. We raised a round as well at that point. So we got the money. The money hit our accounts post the lockdown. So it's been an interesting period, actually.
Yeah. In the world of tech, the, very popularly spread out narrative is that, this COVID has accelerated the growth in tech and it's, helped companies achieve what would have typically taken a year or more in a span of 5 months, right? And I think, the sort of 12x growth that you're talking about in such a short period of time in terms of subscribers, it sort of endorses that, right? I mean, you've seen a sharp uptick and it's entirely, obviously you were seeing growth anyway, but the acceleration is entirely due to COVID, correct?
That's absolutely correct. I think it would, so to say, in marketing terms, there is a term called a funnel movement. There's a funnel for all customers or endorsement, flows through a certain channel. Now you had, before the lockdown, we had to talk to people and tell them, this could be an added advantage if you had online courses and, you launched your academies, not just offline, but also in addition to teaching people in physical classrooms, go online and start distributing content. We would have to spend some time, build our top of the funnel content, explain to people. But then the lockdown and this entire pandemic induced limitation, so to say, helped us convince people. In fact, there was an inbound,
yeah,
a heavy inbound. People were looking for ways to monetize their content. Their businesses had slowed down. We had content creators who were making, let's say, about ₹1 lakh in March, and mm-hmm. in April their revenues got down to zero. This was an urgent need to go online.
So it's obviously a very interesting time, and what I wanted to really talk to you about are some real life case studies that you saw, in the sense that where a creator approached you, either an institution or an individual who would typically not tap the online world, but who got compelled to do it, who kind of reevaluated from a business standpoint where he or she needs to head, and found a fit with Nourish. And how did that journey go?
The whole choice versus necessity conundrum, right?
Absolutely, that's what happened. And let me talk about what Nikhil actually spoke about a bit in terms of what kind of people came on board on the platform. So we had people from all sorts of domain. In the beginning, there were ready technology adopters. In the first few months, it was like a leadership coach who's a bit of technology background or tech savvy. We saw people in culinary skills, in fact, tuition centers, people teaching yoga, dance, all sorts of people in domains where there was a little bit of attraction towards technology. Right. And in the later phase, we started getting interesting cases, people teaching motivation, psychotherapy, all kinds of, like, even a fisherman reaching out to us saying he wants to teach people how to fish better, right. Stuff like that. And when I look at the list of courses on the platform, it's so diverse from typical Indian things that you would think about, like making Indian recipes, to chanting mantras, meditation, to then going into repairing refrigerators, all kinds of courses. We could actually spend a few hours just discussing that,
right.
And looking at some of the interesting content there. But I think it's opened up a much needed window for this entire education and skills space that had never been opened at this scale, or that never been exposed at this scale earlier. I think this is the jolt that this sector was waiting for. This was forced upon, but I think it's going to do a lot of good things to the entire industry, or to say the entire sector.
So, obviously we have spoken in a fair amount of detail on Nourish, on one of her early episodes. Happy to put that link in the description. But, say someone like someone from the culinary world, or like you mentioned, even a fisherman came to monetize his content. Like, how do you guys intervene in that journey? I mean, I know like you guys provide a DIY type of a platform, and you empower them from a technological perspective, you know, giving them all sorts of support, be it a website, be it a place to host their videos. But how does this journey, maybe we can just pick up one example and walk through how does Nourish actually intervene.
So what happens really is that when you're looking to launch an academy for yourself, or take your teaching or training business online, you're going to need various pieces. Now, whether you want to use the platform as a DIY, or you want people to handhold you and then support you go online, right, from building your site to setting up your courses, and a lot of people want guidance on how can they shoot the right courses and stuff like that too. So all of those pieces kind of come out of the Nourish stack for you.
Right.
You're able to kind of just get in touch with us, sign up on one of our plans. If you're on an annual plan, we could even have a support team build the website for you. So if you were on a professional or a power annual plan, which is kind of our one of the SaaS offerings, it would enable you to even just send us the content and, just coordinate with a team. Right. So we have taken into account the kind of audiences that we are dealing with in India. A lot of these people come from backgrounds that they would not have a technology, they're not tech savvy, or they don't have a access to good technology. So we solve that problem too for these people.
So like the idea being like, say I need to like sell a few courses, build an academy, depending on the kind of plan I take, you won't just help me in hosting my videos, but you'll also help in the on the production end, on the distribution end, or also on the, actually building the website from scratch. If I'm not technologically very savvy and don't want to, go through the DIY route, you kind of customize the offering. So you kind of pretty much take the, I would say, technology and distribution burden away, right? I mean, that's pretty much the idea.
Not entirely the distribution. Like, okay. Let me highlight what happens to the distribution. So we like to, when people are asking what Nourish exactly is and how would you compare it to a popular service, it's like Shopify for education and training. That's a good comparison. Now, what happens on Shopify is that you build your online stores, and then you start selling goods that you're also selling from Amazon or somewhere else from your own store.
Right.
Now, in those scenarios, Shopify does not have a marketplace or a storefront.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not going to sell your courses for you.
Right.
Obviously, because they deal in physical products. Now, at this stage, our approach is totally like Shopify. So we are offering the entire tech stack and the design stack for you to build the academy. You will have to learn how to manage and scale distribution. So right. we teach you, we do a lot of webinars. There are free courses and things where we kind of show you how you could start with, let's say, 5,000 rupees of ads on Facebook, Insta, Google, and start selling courses. And there are so many great examples. And I think I would like to give you one example here, enrichmentacademy.com. You know, they started 5th of July. And Geeta Malik is, you know, one of the founders. So they started selling courses on culinary skills like cooking, you know, how do you cook well from home? They've just spent about 1 lakh rupees in the last 40 days and made about 4.5 lakhs selling one online course for 990 rupees. So that's really the kind of scale you could achieve. And this is first 40 days. You know, imagine now they can optimize their click rates and everything better. So that's that's really the potential.
That probably would have, I don't know, I mean, I'm sure that's a successful business, but that probably is comparable to what traditionally their sales would have been, right? I mean, it's probably comparable.
Not at all comparable.
This one is higher?
We've got people, much lower. The physical setups could not scale beyond 1.5-2 lakhs.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Knowledge is higher, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. I misunderstood that. But it's kind of 3x to 7x for people.
Yeah.
So it's basically like if you're doing 1 rupees, you could be doing 3 to 7 now using online because your audiences are now everywhere.
Yeah.
You can... Interestingly, like, let me give you another example. So we've got somebody who's a wine connoisseur. I mean, like she has her own wine range and she does a course on only wines. And imagine if you were trying to sell something like that in the physical world.
Yeah.
It's so tough to find your niches and audiences, you know, and there are so many different courses in that domain. Online, you could pinpoint. You could circle around people who have got hobbies or who have liked pages of wine companies or, you know, certain wines or knowledge about wine. And the marketing and the advertisement platforms online understand those niches. So you could have a niche that's super huge, where in the offline world, you cannot build a business at all.
Yeah.
But online, you could scale it up.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And in you know, in these times, like, how were people primarily discovering you? Were you investing a lot in marketing? Was that a deliberate internal strategy? You know what? Like, our product is more valuable than it ever has been, and hopefully it continues to do so. But you got to put a word out there. Or was it, you know, a lot of it was just people were stumbling upon Nourish by through their own, you know, research and analysis, word of mouth, I guess.
Sharath, I think there I would like to highlight that one of the most important power of any business that I'm realizing more and more is the ability to master funnels.
Yeah.
I think whether you are an offline store, whether you are an online, you know, let's say a content company or somebody selling lights, cameras, whatever you're doing, unless you master funnels, your business will never achieve its distribution potential. So here what our try, and we are still, let me be honest about it, we are on our way to kind of hack and build better and better funnels. And we've got somebody who's joined us as head of growth as well. We worked with outside teams for the last few months. The idea has been that we spend a little bit of money on social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, Google, YouTube to get people to know about that it is possible to sell online courses and it is possible to make the money they lost, you know, in the lockdown period now. They can actually earn more than what they could in the offline world. So we need to show that to people constantly. Build a funnel, you know, where people discover us. Then in the second context, they get middle funnel content. Middle funnel means now they've understood that, yes, something like this could be done, but how do I do it? Are there other people who are being successful at? So addressing in an automated way all of the questions that could be there in the buying journey. How do you get people to experiment and launch their businesses on Nourish? And the journey doesn't end there. You know, my idea about the funnel is that we consider a sale successful or a conversion or a academy to be successful once they start selling. So I think our funnel goes deep down till we have enabled them to sell. We don't consider that we have acquired a customer. So we've worked quite a bit on it, you know, from these social channels to organic content. We've been putting webinars out, you know, we've been producing written content, a few videos. So there's also been a bit of PR where we've been covered by some national, you know, magazines, news fronts. And so that's all been helpful.
Yeah. I was chatting to a friend of mine, actually, a friend of ours, actually. He'd called up early stages COVID, and he's like, oh, you know, I was listening to one of your earlier podcasts with Kinner on Nourish, interesting product. And he's a professor at a business school. So he was saying that I'm going to put in a call. I want to see if there's something that sounds interesting. So I was impressed that our podcast channel and your product both are traveling to the right set of ears, right?
Absolutely, man. You've got a fantastic platform there. I mean, yeah. I love the content you guys produce, and I think it's so relevant. I mean, in all this noise, there are so many channels and sources, but if you can curate from an intelligent viewpoint, you know, which I think you guys are doing an amazing job. So I think that this TransFin is amazing. I mean, I'm always vouching
you.
For it.
Thank you.
Always
thank you
talking
so much.
About it.
Thank you so much. No, that I really appreciate that. And you know, I mean, those discussions on funnel was very kind of resonating at our end also, because obviously we look at content in a deep way, but distribution is something which is like, we realized pretty quickly that just churning out content is only one part of the equation. It's to actually master the distribution. That's where, you know, you actually see the traction that you get. But you know, like kind of talking about when you're talking about, you know, monetization transitioning from the offline to the online world being accelerated by COVID, do you see that staying now for some time? Or do you see that, I mean, you know, because I like to think India is now following the Sweden approach, in the sense that even though we have nothing in common with Sweden in terms of, you know, things are open, now things are kind of getting back to normal. At least the mindset of people are like, you know, yeah, let's see, whatever, life doesn't stop. So do you think, but do you think that is going to change the trajectory of this transition, or have things just permanently changed in a structural manner and people have realized the benefit of online and the benefit of, you know, actually monetizing content in this way?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and I've been talking to people a lot about this. So I think it's close to a tipping point. You know, it all adds up. It all adds up. And I've always believed that universities and formal education institutions, for most of the subjects, and I'm not saying all of the subjects, I'm saying for most of the subjects, are going to be like and have been like a hospital. Before you give me a follow-on question, let me explain that. So what I mean by like a hospital is that you don't go to a hospital till you're sick. So similarly, you won't go to a university or formal education institution for a lot of subjects unless you can't figure it out by yourself through the online content. That's the reality of it. I think it has always been there. Like, I did my master's in 2005, like back in from UK. And at that time, there was just one e-learning management system called Blackboard that my university had. Right. So I remember one of my professors, Professor Tony Ordonell, I mean, one of the biggest names in phylogenetics, in biology, I mean, the subject that I was studying, really successful. So he had this rule that he would not come to class if nobody had posted a question on Blackboard. This was funny. And my class almost had like 30% Indians, you know, like people from this part of the world. And obviously education systems in different parts of the world are structured differently. So all of the Indian students had a, you know, like a really tough time. We are paying so much. Why would this guy not come to class the way the real education should happen and teach us? And you know, he had put up content there, which you could download from, you know, from Blackboard. It wasn't as good as what it is these days. I mean, they were just PowerPoint files and a couple of documents. But even at that point, I could see complete sense. I mean, somebody who'd earned or raised almost in excess of £100 million in funding from BBSRC and some of the largest funding bodies, worked on so many great projects. It's a privilege to be able to ask him questions. Yeah. And, you know, his time is of essence. Why not him coming only to answer those?
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's a matter of our training and conditioning that we go through that, okay, you know what, you're dependent on these degrees, these education systems kind of forcing this education in this classroom environment to you. You could very well read it. I mean, if you can't, there's something wrong with your, wrong with your understanding or your ability to comprehend it yourself. So I think with all this, with the pandemic, we're moving towards a tipping point where a majority of population will start understanding this, that the that all the knowledge out there, you know, that is available and accessible to them through multiple platforms. And I think there's never been mushrooming of platforms in online education space like this time in the last 6 months.
It's very interesting because, I mean, I just want to, sorry to kind of, you know, interrupt you in between, but I just recall.
No, you have to. I get carried away, man. It's perfectly
No, actually, the thing that I kind of kept in my mind was, you know, this newsletter by Scott Galloway, Prof. G.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether you have checked it out. Like, he's a NY...
I've seen it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Excellent guy. Yeah, like, I've read it.
So, he's been commenting very actively on how the Ivy League as well as US university system is on the, you know, precipice of getting massively disrupted by COVID, because his main thesis, and this is actually almost 2.5-3 months ago when COVID struck, was that as soon as the new, you know, September session starts and parents realize that the kids are actually not physically going to go to these universities for which, you know, they are paying like $80,000, $100,000 every year, they will realize the, you know, fat margin. Like, it's almost an 80-90% margin business when it comes to the creme de la creme universities and colleges. That that entire margin is going to get challenged in a big way. And, you know, like, you know, even if tier one colleges, you know, who already have like, you know, thousands of people in waiting lists, maybe they won't get hit. But, you know, there's that entire plethora of tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 till tier 10 educational institutions who actually are not very, very, I would say, reasonable from a pricing perspective. But the quality is not there. But there's that entire, you know, endpoint that, okay, I'm going to get a degree there. A degree means legitimacy. Legitimacy means I'll get employed. That entire equation is going to get challenged in a big way. And I think already, I mean, a lot of the US universities are facing the pain from the perspective of, you know, they are tapping into their endowment funds now. And, you know, they are seeing that academic revenue is not picking up. So, I mean, I don't know whether in India where education is still so underpenetrated and, you know, enrollments are still at a lower end of the spectrum, how immediate that effect would be. But definitely in the West, it's already coming true.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, inevitable, man. Like, companies, even as big as Google, are now saying that they don't just value the degree. And a lot of them have gotten away with primary requirements to apply for certain jobs as the degrees. You know, they're saying, if you can prove that you've got the skill, you can get the job. So, we have hired so many people in positions like content, design. You know, we are very close to hiring people in tech also who can prove that they have the skills.
Right.
So we don't care how they got there. I mean, at times we are able to see advantage in hiring from the tier one colleges, but most of times it doesn't bring any distinct advantage.
Yeah.
And we are able to see that kind of spark in a lot of other people who don't come with those backgrounds. So we are in for a change that's going to just, you know, basically jolt down the entire foundations of these educational institutions.
But to be fair, you know, like licensing and certification, that definitely brings a lot of value, right? I mean, because that is something which is used as a filter by any employer. But whether you need to actually have a, you know, brick and mortar classroom type of setup to get that
from XYZ,
I don't know.
No, so I disagree there. Right. I'll tell you why. I think the certifications and all these skills, after they've gone online, have stopped acting like a filter.
Okay.
Because you understand now the access has been opened up. So if I now, and it's a common question by employers now, they say that, okay, when you ask someone, like yesterday we were in a call with somebody and I told them that, you know, head of growth at our company had studied from SDA Bocconi. The first question he asked was it in Italy or was it the Mumbai campus? You know, and now the third question people ask is, was it Italy, Mumbai or online? You know, so eventually when all those degrees are democratized, which it's happening right now, it stops being a filter. Like, I would not hire or let even anyone pass through the first filter of my organization for a role unless they have cleared one of the tests. I've looked at a portfolio. Right. I've looked at the project legacy that they bring. I don't think so it acts as a filter. And I'm pretty sure most of the organizations would be of the same opinion. So I think overrated.
But it also kind of depends on whether getting into Bocconi in Italy is a tougher process than getting into an online course of Bocconi in Italy, right? I mean, that tier, as long as that tier is there, people would think about it, no?
No, but think about this. So, I mean, again, you know, I wouldn't, like, Jaskaran is not here, but let me just give you a hypothetical situation.
Sure.
So if I hired a guy from like a tier one institution and he passed out like 7, 8 years, 9 years ago, and I've seen this several times. So the work ethic, the fire, you know, the ability to take initiative and go think out of the box, or to be able to support whatever work function they are positioned in beyond what's plainly expected out of them, is not a function of that filter anymore. You know, 7, 8 years is a long time to get into bad habits of work, you know, at even a big four. Yeah. Or a smart, you know, like whatever organization hired you after that star, you know, institution that you came out from. And on the other end, you know, there could be a guy who's not been to those institutions, who had not far passed through a filter at that age, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But the last 10 years, he's been a superstar. He's progressively sharpened his ability. He's studied, you know, throughout. He's upgraded himself through books, online courses. And you'll say that's a one-off case, or you'll say those are outliers. They are not anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm meeting more and more of those guys. And I think that's what means more, because in 5, 6 years, the entire paradigm of technology, management styles, everything changes.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless you add someone who's constantly on their toes, you know, there's no way for you to apply that filter. I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah. Talking about hiring, how has you know, work from home been for your organization? Was it, I'm guessing, like, you guys are ideally placed for a smoother transition into that kind of regime. Is that true?
Well, I don't know how to, my formula is how to answer this. I'm trying to put together my thoughts, but I think I'll be honest and tell you that I'm not a fan from work from home. I mean, okay. I don't care what people think, and that's my honesty.
Yeah.
We were back at work on 18th May when the lockdown was opened, and we heard that 33% people could get back.
Hmm.
So the next morning we were back at office, like almost 30% of the, you know, of the workforce, and now almost 70, 75%, 80% of us are back, except a few people in coming from, you know, who are dependent on metro because it's still not operational.
Yeah.
So nothing against it. I mean, do we like this more is because we are building a lot of things. We are running a lot of experiments that are on, you know, we like to see results much faster.
Mm-hmm.
The energy of physical presence, like me just being able to walk up to someone and quickly change tack, change, you know, some fine tune, some activity, quickly get into a room like this. So we are sitting in the meeting room, you know, talk to each other. I mean, we love this, and I think this has really helped us. We experimented by giving a few people work from home, you know, liberties, who were first time joiners, because we hired a lot of people during the last 3, 4 months. It did not work. None of those hires. We did 5 or 6. It's not effective, maybe because I think we are evolving, we are growing. All of our systems are not very well set up right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want to, I think. And Gurgaon, I mean, it's been a lot of offices have opened to a certain extent, you know, and we've kind of in that category.
No, I just was, you know, like thinking, like when we were talking about online learning, teaching.
Just before that, did I disappoint you with the work from home answer? Sharad.
Not at all.
I mean, you know, we ourselves are kind of strong believers of, like, at least when it comes to ideation, when it comes to structuring, we ourselves feel that it's important to be in the same room. To be honest, my take has been that when it comes to, like, you know, very commoditized parts of a work plan, I think they work pretty well even online. They work pretty well remotely, you know, where some amount of structure, some amount of process has been locked. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, new projects, growth, product, you know, areas where you require, you don't have a structure yet in place, there it's always, at least the people who are, who have the responsibility of, you know, thinking about those problems, it will probably be better if they're in the same room, you know.
I agree. So that's been the experience.
Yeah, I mean, and anyways, you know, Kinnar, like we come from the background of financial services, which are very traditional office type. We have kind of been trained in that setting. So, you know, I mean, I like to think that, you know, my time at work is my time at work. My time at home is my time at home. So we kind of prefer that kind of a regimented setup. Not very millennial, to be very fair, you know, from that standpoint. But it is what it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, another thing is, like, whatever you're good at in a work from home environment can be replicated at work, but things which are good in a work from office environment cannot be replicated at home. So there's greater optionality in working from home, but yeah, like, you know, there's some things which are not worth the convey, the traveling and time and safety and all that. So yeah. I get that. Yeah. Yeah, it's a mix, I guess, but you know, whatever works.
Yeah.
So yeah, you did not disappoint us. We tend to agree that everyone has sort of a different way.
We thought if we'd show a very enthusiastic approach, that, you know, to your response, it might come out politically not very correct. So we thought, okay, let's just, you know. Obviously, you have not made making a popular point like us.
Okay. That's what I thought. I mean, a lot of people, you know, people are now approaching us. A lot of applications we get, it's written in the application that if you're not offering work from home, I don't consider me a candidate. Okay. I'm getting so many of those. Yeah. So many.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, you know, obviously commercial real estate, that sector is obviously going through a disruption of its own. So yeah, let's see how it kind of pans out. But, you know, like coming back to... your sector, you know, when you look at like online training, online learning, teaching, education, I mean, there are a lot of filters, you know, there are a lot of levers in which Nourish sits. But if you kind of step back and look at the overall ecosystem, ecosystem of online education, online learning, I mean, you have end-to-end professionally generated content plays like Byju's who have their own people who create a lot of content, who distribute it also. Then you have, you know, pure play marketplaces where, you know, teachers and learners are just kind of using that platform to interface. We have platforms like you guys who are actually providing, you know, very essential support and handholding in terms of setting up your academy. How do you see the overall, you know, like there are now, I mean, I think from the last, like if you're talking about 4 years back or 3 years back, and if you talk about these things in the year 2020, edtech or online learning has changed, you know, in a very big way. Do you see like consolidation propping up? That's the next step. Like there are like micro monopolies which have already been created and they are going to basically just acquire everyone else and become bigger. Or do you still see a lot of, you know, uncovered, untouched niches which can be, you know, looked at? The reason I asked is we asked the exact same question to another guest of ours, you know, who's the founder of Testbook.com, which is an assessment company. You know, it is not a testing platform focused primarily on
competitive exams
for government, public sector jobs.
An online product.
Yeah. So I'd asked the exact same question to him. So I just wanted to also get your sense on it.
So I personally think that unlike a lot of other sectors, education has always been a very niche driven, sector, so to say. If you look at evolved markets like the US and some parts of the Europe, you'll see that there could be a $200 million company just doing training for doctors, you know, online training for doctors or providing technology for that sector. There could be another, you know, I've seen a $90 million company just doing training components and technology for training, delivered to truckers, like, you know, logistic players. So I think this is one sector where there are so many possibilities, like Byju's kind of has operated in the K-12 space, solving a really huge and a real problem there. I see Imbibe, the Geo Imbibe entering into the same space soon. So when you ask me about kind of consolidation here, a bit of consolidation in similar niches where there is an overlap of the persona that people are targeting, like if you're teaching content and your target audience is, let's say, school students, Byju's has been doing certain type of content, which is K-12 primary education, you know, the basically everything that your school needs to teach. And they figured that coding was a piece that was missing, you know, where they could acquire White Hat Junior. But it's the persona driven acquisition where you have the same target audience and you have a piece of content that's not available in your kitty. That stuff kind of happens. But there are multiple niches where you would say individual independent players becoming really large. And a lot of global companies coming out of India too, because, what education in India is setting out to be with, powered with technology, including companies like White Hat Junior's proposition. They are all global from the word go, you know, and that's also kind of opens it up for all the companies, not just in this part of the world, companies starting anywhere, because internet and all this digital access will enable you to approach and acquire customers anywhere in the world. So I would say that no, there would be much less consolidation in this sector in comparison to, let's say, a media space or you know, let's say real let's say the e-commerce play. It's not going to be like that.
What is you know, for Naresh, what are your key you know, growth ambitions in terms of near term sort of priorities? Do you want to sort of vertically explore other avenues and or you know, explore other relationships and tie-ups? You know, is investment or fundraising sort of priority? I know you guys are already gone through that and you know, fairly well funded like that, but what are some of the things that you think about which are really critical at this juncture, and considering you're coming off a stellar period of growth, right? So it makes it very interesting.
There are multiple focus areas right now. From a customer acquisition standpoint, we are looking to expand our offerings outside India as well, because as is, we get you know, customers and content creators from all around. Middle East is one of the you know, hot markets that we get a lot of customers from, Africa, Europe. So we would actively go out That would happen. We also have celebrities coming on board to launch their courses. Big celebrities with 20 million, 30 million followers on social media channels, you know, following them. So that's happening. So we'll have maybe a kitty of those celebrities and empowering them with a closer partnership. You know, they get more benefits and advantages. That's another focus area. From a tech standpoint, we have already released, like just earlier this week, a live streaming technology for live classes, which is built by us, you know, on the Amazon stack. In-house, so we didn't kind of use ready pieces. It lets anybody deliver training to from one, you know, from a class of let's say 50 students to even 1,000, 10,000 students. Up to 10,000 students can attend a single session, and you could do a one-way stream where you don't get disturbed. Like in a Zoom environment or a Microsoft Teams or a Google Meet environment, which were primarily built for meetings. You know, they were not products built for education, so to say. So we've built this live streaming service for that. And there is, to be honest, a list of about 600 features that is in the product pipeline. We are prioritizing, and there is obviously, you know, kind of a step-by-step release plan. We've also hired in tech, and we are expanding that team further now. Also, fundraising for this expansion and growth that we are talking about, there's a huge surge in demand. I mean, like, there are people who were never thinking of doing online courses, now thinking of doing online courses and going online. So the market size has probably become 5 to 6 times, which is also shown in the growth of not just our user base. Almost all edtech companies have kind of seen that kind of growth. So how do we cater to that? And also at the same time, we do believe that this is a global product, you know, so the fundraise, the next round's fundraise is also already underway. We are talking to some leading funds. We've also received commitments and offers, which we are hopeful that, you know, in the next 3 to 4 months, we'll close another round. That's kind of an overall.
That's a long list of things, and I'm very happy that you're able to find 40 minutes to have a chat with us with all this, you know, with so many things going in the background. Just one thing I want to, like, you know, ask you about, and I mean, it's obviously something that maybe like, it's not a focus area for you guys, but just your kind of take on that, you know, when you're talking about the live stream product and, you know, the entire idea of tailoring a proposition which is more suited for live teaching. What are your thoughts on teacher training? Like, I ask you because, you know, now, I mean, I have a 4-year-old nephew who's at my place these days, and, you know, all his school lessons have now been moved online. And the funniest thing is that, like, just looking at those teachers not understanding how to communicate in front of a camera, in front of a phone. I mean, I think that's such a big area as well, right? In just training the teachers to get more and more comfortable with this new medium.
No, absolutely. I think very well spotted. So that's another answer to the question of consolidation and niches in education. I personally feel like you could have a $100 million company just doing teacher training, you know, like a teacher training online academy or an institution. That's very, very possible. Our focus is to produce a lot of content to help teachers. We are already doing that. We have done sessions with filmmakers like Harish from Out the Box. You know, we did that a few weeks ago. He's worked on some leading movies in the Southern India and in the Indian film industry. And we've done other sessions where people have spoken about using just basic mobile devices and how do you get in front of the camera, what kind of equipment to use. So we'll continue to produce more content on that. And this will all be for free. You know, so this is an effort that we want to empower more and more content creators. From a standpoint of a regular K-12 classroom teaching, we are not focused only on that. So, you know, that's, I'm sure there are a lot more courses and academies coming on Nourish. I've seen a few where people are teaching, you know, teachers. So train the trainer kind of programs are running there. And you'll see more and more of those. I think the problem is going to be of choice. Then eventually, you know, content is going to be in plenty. So, yeah. Lot happening in that space.
Yeah, and it was great to hear your take on a multiple range of things. It's you know, interesting times for businesses across the board, and for someone which is so heavily levered to digital first, I mean, it's a good time to sort of gain some traction and learn so much about consumer behavior. No, listen, you've been with us for 45 minutes. Thanks so much for your time. You've been here before, and it was this chat was no different. It was thoroughly fascinating, and it's always good to have you on board.
Thank you so much, guys. I love what you guys are doing. So, you know, carry on with all the great products and solutions that you're coming out with. I keep hearing and reading so many newsletters and mailers that come across my way. So great. I follow Transfin and I mean, love chatting to you guys always. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I feel very energized after today's conversation. No, thanks a lot, Kinnar. Thanks a lot for the time. And no, and with this, I think we'll be back soon. And, you know, with another exciting guest. Exciting, I don't know, exciting, intriguing, whatever. Sharad will choose the word.
Yeah.
His adjectives keep on changing. So let's pick that up in the next episode. No, thanks a lot. And this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran.
Signing off.
Yeah.